Okay, this week is Parshas Kisisa. Parshas Kisisa, Tov Shin Ayin Beis. Okay, so let me share with you a few things. Let me go backwards. The end of the Parsha, we learned about it. I was always fascinated with this. Still don't understand it. The Masveh. It's very good for after Purim. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he came down from the mountain, he koran or ponath. The Bnei Yisrael noticed that his face was shining. He was in Shemayim for three sets of 40 days and came down. Hashem was teaching him Torah. He absorbed the rays of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. His face was shining and they were afraid to look at Moshe Rabbeinu. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He put upon his face a mask. Wore a mask. It's Purim. He wore a mask. But he did not wear a mask at all the time. If you look at the very end of the parasha, the pasuk says, "Uvavo Moshe lefnei Hashem l'dabrito yosir es hamasveh at seiso." When he spoke to Hashem, he took off the mask. The yotza v'dibrel bnei Yisrael es asher yitzuvem v'ru bnei Yisrael pnei Moshe ki kon arpon pnei Moshe v'heishiv Moshe es hamasveh alpon of. So Moshe went and he put the mask back on at bo'o l'dabrito. There are a lot of nuances in the pasuk. You have to learn the Rashi very carefully. It's a little confusing. When did Moshe Rabbeinu actually wear the mask? What it appears to be the consensus of most of the Mefarshim is Moshe Rabbeinu only wore the mask when he taught Torah to the Jewish people. When he was by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's clear he was not wearing the mask. When he was teaching, when he was among the Jewish people, he wore the mask. When? 24/7? No. When he gave a shiur, he wore the mask. But when he went about his daily business, when he went home, when he came and went, he wasn't wearing the mask. Now that's very interesting because you would think it's just the opposite. When Moshe would teach Torah, then his face should shine, people should see the rays. And when he's going home, his private business, he's walking in and out on the street, that's when he put on the mask because that's a more mundane activity. But no, that's not the pshat, it's just the opposite. When he taught the Jewish people Torah, he wore the mask. When he went out into the street, he did not wear the mask. So from this, I think we can learn it's a very powerful idea. There's a halach, there's a very big problem. How could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu did not wore a mask when he taught her? Don't we have a pasuk, V'hoyu einecha rohois es marecha? There's such a thing, it's to see your Rebbe. You're supposed to see him. There's body language. There's something to it, to see the person's expression. That is also part of the limud. Yet, when Moshe Rabbeinu, due to his unusual circumstances, was not able to fulfill this, we were not able to fulfill this halacha because his face had this supernatural light. So by Moshe Rabbeinu, when were they able to actually see his face? It's when he was not giving a shir. When he was going about his private affairs. That's when they were able to be mekayim v'hoyu einecha rohos es marecha. Who is the Rebbe of Klal Yisrael? Moshe Rabbeinu. But now, what is the Musar Haskel of this idea? There are some places where they're very makbid. You have to have the teacher has to have a PhD, has to have credentials. The content must be 110%. But unfortunately, it attracts people that are not necessarily the biggest Yorei Shemayim. I mean, okay, is that a good thing or not? What is more important when you're teaching children Torah? You should have Rabbeim that are trained in education, dealing with children. They know there's a science how to teach, what to do, how to educate. But as far as religious observance, it's not so important. This is such an approach. It's not so important that they should themselves be Shomer Shabbos. They don't have to be Shomer Shabbos. As long as they know the content, they know Tanakh, they know Talmud, they know Mishnah, and they are professionally trained in as being educators, that is the most important. Now that's an extreme case example, not even Shomer Shabbos. But there is such an approach. And in some of these institutions, the tuition is like $20,000, $30,000 a year because we only have people that have postdoctorates that will teach your child Chumash. Are they Shomer Shabbos? No. But that's not important. You see from here, from this halacha, that's a very big mistake. V'hoyu einecha rois es mayrecha. You have to see your Rebbe. When Moshe Rabbeinu taught Torah, they didn't even see him. They didn't see him. The content was the best possible content. Neira v'oyim. He was teaching them mamish Torah misinai. But they didn't see him because Moshe kikar and arpa. When did they see Moshe Rabbeinu? The only time they were makayim v'hoyu einecha rois mayrecha, which is probably more of a limud Torah, is when he was not teaching them. It's just the way he conducted himself in life. He went home, he came, he went, and the things that he did as a regular person, that's where they saw Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's where it was fulfilled, v'hoyu einecha rois mayrecha, where you, to a degree, you really observe from your Rebbe more than you actually gadol shimusha yoshem limudo. You learn more from your Rebbe by being mishamesh him, by having a relationship with him, not in learning, then actually listening to his shir. Now, of course, I'm not foolish enough to tell you that that's the yikra. I mean, if a person doesn't know how to give a shir, and a person is an ama aretz, he's a yari shemayim, he doesn't belong in the classroom. That's a davar pashut amon. There has to obviously be a balance. There has to be a balance, probably tilting more in favor that a person should know how to teach and should have what to teach the children. But he also has to be a Yorei Shemayim. That's Pashat. He has to be a Yorei Shemayim and a person that in his daily life conducts himself according with what he teaches. Because that is the ikur of the Hoyu Einecha Rois Esmarecha. That's what we see here from this idea in the end of this week's parasha. Okay, another short idea. In the beginning of this week's parasha, we have Shabbos. Shabbos all over the Torah. So Shabbos is always a great topic. We don't have what to say. You always can fit Shabbos into a drasha when you're stuck in a time to appear. I saw in the safe Halekach v'Halivov. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Halekach v'Halivov. Halivov. That's in the
Aderet Zviam.
There's Emuna. Nusach Sfarat says that. When do they say Nusach Sfarat? Shabbos, right? They say it every Shabbos. Nusach Ashkenaz only says it on the Yom Neiron, if you even say it on the Yom Neiron. One of those piyutim which is skipped. But no, but most people do say it. That's from the more popular piyutim. But Halakach Valiv was authored by Rav Avram Shur, here in the neighborhood. Tremendous Talmud Chacham, a very holy person. And he has a very beautiful idea. And I do not know all of the sources, just bits and pieces. This week is the first Shabbos after Purim. When did Bnei Yisrael begin to build the Mishkan? When Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai on Yom Kippur. Vayomer Hashem solachti chidvarecha. The Egel took place shortly, 40 days after Matan Torah. Matan Torah was Vav. Zai really was Zai and Sivan the first year, and then Moshe Rabbeinu went to Shemayim to learn the rest of the Torah. He came down, they worshipped the eagle. Moshe Rabbeinu went back up to Shemayim for another 80 days, and he came down in Yom Kippur with the Luchos Shnios, which is this week's parsha, the second set of Luchos, that's what we have in this week's parsha. Vayoymer Hashem Solachti Chidvarecha. And what was the next thing that he told them to do? Let's build a Mishkan. Let's build the Mishkan. We have to build the Mishkan. So they started preparing to build the Mishkan when Moshe Rabbeinu came down on the 11th day of Chodesh. He came down on the 10th day of Tishrei, Yom HaKippurim, V'yom Hashem Selach Tichet Barecha, and on the 11th day of Tishrei there was an appeal, V'yikhu Li Truma, everyone should contribute towards the building of the Mishkan, and they started building, they started work on the Mishkan. When was the Mishkan put up? It was put up on the first day of, the 25th day of Adar. 25th day of Adar was the beginning of the Miluim. The last day of the Miluim was the first day of Nisan, but the Miluim began, the beginning of the process began already on the 25th day of Chodesh Adar. How many Shabbosos were there from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu instructing the Jewish people to build the Mishkan until they complete the Shabbos before the 25th day of Adar? exactly 21. Okay, you have to, I didn't make the calculation, but this one it says I saw this in many places. There are 21 Shabbosos during the time period when the Bnei Yisrael were busy constructing the Mishkan, even though we know they really finished the Mishkan on Chanukah, the 25th day of Kislev, and there was a delay, but still there must have been some activity taking place in preparation until the beginning of Nisan, the 25th day of Adar, until they actually put up the Mishkan for the very first time. There were 21 Shabbosos during the time where they were busy constructing the Mishkan. And that's why the Pasuk here says, and then this is the question, this is the Rashi discussed this, is the building of the Mishkan Docha Shabbos? Are you allowed to Mechalel Shabbos to build the Mishkan? You always hear the joke in Shul, everyone, they have an appeal in Shul, everyone write out your check, and don't worry, even though it's Shabbos, it's Pikuach Nefesh. Make sure you write the check on Shabbos and bring it in. Every Shul has a joke, something along some type of joke like that, but is building of the Mishkan Docha Shabbos? So the answer is no. Ach es Shabbos. Aside, the pasuk compares the building of the Mishkan to Shabbos, and the Gemara makes Chazal make a drasha. Although I've told you to build a Mishkan, but still observe my Shabbosos, the building of the Mishkan is not Docha Shabbos. So there were 21 times during the construction period of the Mishkan where they stopped. They stopped, everyone go home, you're not allowed to do any more labor in preparation for, in the process of building the Mishkan. 21 times. And that's why it says here in this week's parasha, Ach, Eshab Sosai Tishmaru, Ach is Bigmatria 21. Okay, now, this is a fascinating idea. We all know, we're all very machbid, there's something called Toysef Shabbos. You light candles, how many minutes before Shabbos do you light candles? At least 18 minutes. You can light even more. Why do you light candles 18 minutes before Shabbos, before sunset? Why not light candles 1 minute, the moment before? Toysef Shabbos. There's a mitzvah to be Moisef Michol Ala Kodesh. Add a little bit more to Shabbos. With Shabbos, we don't end Shabbos the very moment. We always add a little bit more to Shabbos. It's very important. There's a mitzvah, Chazal, the Droshas, the Torah, and the Gemara. It's a very important thing to add a little bit more to Shabbos before Shabbos begins and when Shabbos ends. Toysef Shabbos. Here's the question. Is the building of the Mishkan Doiche? Does it push aside Toysef Shabbos? So if Avraham Shur brings down, I don't know all the sources, it is Doicha, Toysef Shabbos. The building of the Mishkan is so important, you're not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, that's the Torah says. But you're allowed to do labor for the construction of the Mishkan during the time that you otherwise would have observed for Toysef Shabbos. In other words, when they were building the Mishkan, they did not light candles 18 minutes before sunset. They lit candles the second before sunset. Because until the very last minute, they were busy, they were on the construction site working on the Mishkan. The moment Shabbos is over, not like us, Shabbos, let's say you hold Shabbos over 50 minutes, whatever your Zman is. So, 50 minutes, you daven Maariv, whatever you daven, 45 minutes, 47 minutes, and then until you really finish davening, you don't go home until, you're not going to be home until 60 minutes, 65 minutes, 70 minutes, 72 minutes, a little bit more. Everyone is mekayem to a certain degree, Toysef Shabbos, not them. They had a minyan on the construction site, they finished Maariv, if they held Shabbos over 50 minutes after sunset, whatever, I'm giving you an example, they finished Maariv 49 minutes after sunset, so they can be back on the job exactly 50 minutes after sunset, because the building of the Mishkan is Doiche Toysef Shabbos. Unbelievable. This is what he quotes sources for this. When was the first time then that the Jewish people observed Shabbos in its full glory? The full glory with Toysef Shabbos. It was this Shabbos, Parashas Kisis. It was the Shabbos after Purim. Because the Shabbos after Purim was the 22nd Shabbos. I don't know, you have to make all the calculations. You have to look up the Sefer. It's a little bit too complicated for me, and the preparation time I have is not complete. But this is what it says. That there were 21 Shabbosos during the construction period of the Mishkan. The 22nd Shabbos was already the Shabbos when it was in the process of after the Ach, I don't know the calculations. This was the first, after Purim, is the first Shabbos of Toysef Shabbos. And that's why in this week's parashas, why do you have Shabbos different parashas in the Torah? Because Parashas Kisisa is the tkufa, hashkocha pratis of the year in the sidra, the something to the sidra, in the year when after Purim, you now, it's a very beautiful Shabbos, the Shabbos, different than the previous 21 Shabbosos. Since it's a Shabbos in its full glory, Tosefa Shabbos.
The Mishkan was up already?
The Mishkan was complete. The Mishkan was put up on the 25th day. The Mishkan was put up on the 25th day of Adar.
So there was a Shabbos before that.
I don't know the exact calculation. It could be the 20. That was the first Shabbos. It could be the 25th Shabbos. The 25th day of Adar was the 22nd Shabbos. I don't know the calculation works out. 21. There were 21 Shabbosos.
No, 14th of Adar.
No, so it's not. It's not necessarily. I take that back. It wasn't. It wasn't. I just mean after Purim. It means you have, I guess, another week in the calculation. I don't know the details. I'm speaking too much. But basically, there were 21 Shabbosos, and then the 22nd Shabbos. That's what this week's parasha is referring to: the observance of Shabbos. 21 times. Don't be mechal Shabbos, but you're allowed to do malacha during the zman of the Tosefa Shabbos. But now, the 22nd Shabbos, a different Shabbos. Different Shabbos. With the full glory of, it's a very beautiful idea, how they observe Shabbos in the time of the Mishkan.
Maybe the work went over to a partial week, and this is the first full week.
Okay, you have to be ma'ayin, what it means. But this is an idea. It's a raw idea which requires more details.
Could it be that in...
Halekach v'halivuf. Now there are many volumes. He published another volume almost every year. He puts out another volume of Avraham Shur. In Parashas Kisisa, I don't know. I have almost all of them. He has many. He has every year. He publishes. He speaks on Shabbos, I think 3 or 4 times. Friday night, Shabbos morning, and Shalosh Shudis. And he takes all of his Divrei Torah and he writes it up. And every year he publishes Sefer. This is what I said in Tavshin Samach Aleph. So he's like 10 years behind. And now, I think he's combining, he's not putting out every year, I don't know. Then he has on Chanukah, and he has a Haggadah, they're all called Halekach v'Halivov. Then he combined all of the Bereishis into one volume. It's confusing to keep track of all the different volumes, but his Torah is very original, very, very creative. So unusual. Today, you know, today's day and age, all of the Sfarim is just a spin-off, an old Yisod. It's very hard to find Talmidei Chacham being mechadesh, new ideas, like new. So he has a lot of his things are very original and creative, and this, in fact, I thought to be very different. It's a Shabbos, Tosefa Shabbos. Okay, running out of time, I want to tell you a very interesting Vart. I want to tell you something before I get to the interesting thing. I'll tell you another Vart. This week's Parsha, we learn about Tfilin. Something fascinating. The Ribbono Shel Olam wears tefillin. Moshe's mevakish. We lay this every Taina Sibur. We just went through Taina Sester. Every Taina Sibur, Hareini Noes Kavaydech. Ribbono Shel Olam, show me your honor. These are from the most difficult psukim in the whole Torah. There's no question about it. The psukim that we lay in this Shabbos, where Moshe Rabbeinu asked for mechila for the eagle, and we lay it on Taina Sibur, and we lay in these psukim on Shabbos Chol Hamoed, are without question Shuta Shel Mikra. The simple translation of the words are the most difficult psukim to understand. What in the world is going on? I'm going to pass over. I'm going to cover you. You're going to go into the cleft of a rock. It's very, very difficult. But whatever it means, it's very mystical. But it does say, Moshe was mevakesh, show me kivaydech. What does that mean? Show me what you look like. So you tell a child, I want to see Hashem. Okay, so a child, limited understanding, for an adult, a mature adult, who, what does that mean, to see Hashem? And Hashem, so Moshe Rabbeinu is asking to see Hashem, what does that mean? And Hashem says, you can't see me, I can't show you my front, but I'll show you my back. What does that mean? And what does Hashem end up showing? The Kesher Shel Tfilin. Hashem shows Moshe Rabbeinu the Dalit. Hashem wears Tfilin? What does that mean? Hashem also wears a talis. When Hashem taught Moshe Rabbeinu the Yud, the Gimel, Midas, Harachamim, Chazal tell us that he wrapped himself in a talis like a shliach tzibur. Mystical things. But one thing we learn, Hashem wears tefillin. Okay. The Gemara, asked Hashem, we asked Tefillin, what does it say in Hashem's Tefillin? We know what it says in our Tefillin. We have four parashas. Kaddish Levayki Yivyacha, Shema V'chayim Shemaya. What does it say in Hashem's Tefillin? So the Gemara tells in great detail all the parashas. And the first thing it says is, Umi Ka'amcha Yisrael Goyechon Baritz. That's the first parasha. We say, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. In Hashem's Tefillin it says, Umi Ka'amcha, who is like my nation? Ka'amcha Yisrael Goyechon Baritz. So we had in the past two shiurim on Aleinu. Right? We spoke about Aleinu at great length. Told you about Yoshua, all these interesting things. So how now a new part? Tell you about Aleinu.
What?
A new part in Aleinu. A new part.
Tell us why you say it.
What? He remembers everything. I don't even remember.
I remember. It was a great part.
A new part on Aleinu. I saw this somewhere. I don't remember where I saw this. What is Aleinu? The whole Nusach of Aleinu really is describing the Tefillin of Hashem. Because what is the first parasha of Hashem's Tefillin? Umi ke'amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. What do we say in Aleinu? Shelo yosanu ki goyei ho arotzos. Velo samanu ki mishpecho ho suadamah. Shelo samchel keinukam. V'gor leinu kechol hamanam. We're not like them. The whole Aleinu focuses on the fact that we are different. Goy echad ba'aretz. We're completely different. Umi ka'amcha Yisrael goy echad. It's amazing. The theme of Aleinu is really what's the theme of Hashem's Tefillin. Fascinating. Is it not fascinating? That's really what it's all about. This week's parasha, Hashem wears Tefillin. That itself is a mind-blowing concept that Hashem wears Tefillin, and Hashem has a Dalit, and Hashem has a Til Shalosh. And what does it say in Hashem's Tefillin? Mi Kiamcha Yisrael. And that's really the theme of Aleinu. Now, there's a halach in Yerushalayim, in Eretz Yisrael. It's put out in Shulchan Aruch, if I'm not mistaken. We only make a bracha when we put on Tefillin. How many brachas do we make? So some, we generally, Ashkenazim, we make two brachas. Some people make, anyone here make one bracha? Some people make one bracha. They make one bracha. There's a whole, Chofetz Chaim himself, they say, made one bracha. Even though he wrote in the Mishnah Berurah, you should make two brachas. So he said, that's my minhag. That's my father. That's my tradition. Shulchan Aruch, he wrote that you make two brachas, but fine. But when we put on Tefillin, we make a bracha. Do you make a bracha when you take off Tefillin? So there are opinions in the Gemara that yes, you should make a bracha. Shema Malchus. And what's the bracha? Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam. Something along the line, Shenishmar Chukecha, we should observe your laws. There's a bracha. There's a special bracha you make when you take off Tefillin. Shenishmar Chukecha. And indeed, this was done by, I think, the people that lived in Eretz Yisrael. I think it's brought in Yerushalmi. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. Halacha l'maisa, we do not make a bracha when we take off Tefillin. Okay, what it means, why make a bracha, what's the meaning of the bracha, that's another story to itself, which I'm not prepared on, I don't know the details. However, we allude to this bracha, and we do make the bracha in some form at the end of Asher Volitzion. At the end of Asher Volitzion, we say a Yihi Ratzon, Yihi Ratzon Melufanecha, Hashem Elokeinu, Velokei Avoseinu, Shenishmar Chukecha Ba'olam Hazeh. The bracha that was made by those who make a bracha, B'Shem Malchus, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Shenishmar Chukecha. And then you take off your tefillin. We don't make the bracha B'Shem Malchus, but we instead transform the bracha into a Yehi Ratzon. And indeed, there are people that right after they say this Yehi Ratzon, even before they get to the end, they take off their tefillin. Before they say the psukim of Bitachon, there are three psukim of Bitachon, Baruch HaGever Sheyiftach B'Hashem, as soon as they make the Yehi Ratzon, they take off their tefillin, because this, to a certain degree, is the bracha you make in place of the bracha of taking off tefillin. That's it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. If you want, you would be Rabbeinu Tam, so you shouldn't take off your Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. If you're going to put on Rabbeinu Tam, take off, you shouldn't wear it until you make you say the Yiratzon. But really, there's a Kaddish Shalim. Okay, fine. But what do we do after we say this Yiratzon? We take off our Tefillin. We say Aleinu. So what are we really doing? When we take off our Tefillin, we say Aleinu for many reasons. Let's put that aside. But we're also reminding ourselves, although we have no choice but take off, we are not roy to wear tefillin the entire day. We're not even roy to wear tefillin when we daven. Tefillin is a shame Hashem, and we don't have a guf nukki. We cannot conduct ourselves on a high spiritual level, so we have to take off tefillin. But we say, even though we're taking off our tefillin, Hashem is wearing tefillin. There is this parallel. It's now time. We're taking off our tefillin, And the next thing we say is, Aleinu, we remind ourselves, we took off tefillin, but either we're putting on Hashem's tefillin, or we remind ourselves, we took off tefillin, but Hashem is still wearing tefillin. It's very, these two things come together at the end of davening. Okay, let me now jump. There's something else I want to tell about tefillin, but if we have time at the end, I'll tell you that. I wanted to tell you another idea. Again, we'll try to come back to tefillin a little bit later. Maybe we'll save another time. In this week's parasha, we learned about the two master craftsmen of the Mishkan. There were two master craftsmen. Who were they? Bezalel. According to the Medrash, she was only 13 years old. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor Re'ei Korasi V'Shem Bezalel Ben Uri V'Nchur L'Mate Yehuda. And go further. Okay, we go on another passage. Hashem is saying, I'm going to give him an assistant. He's not the only one that's going to be a master craftsman in my Mishkan. Hinei, nosati ito. I have given to join him, Ace Oholiov. This individual, his name is Oholiov. His father was Achisamach, Ben Achisamach. From which tribe does he come from? Lemate Don, from the tribe of Don. Two craftsmen. Bezalel, where does Bezalel, which tribe does Bezalel come from? Bezalel, Ben Uri, Ben Chur Lemate Yehuda. The passage is very clear. Bezalel comes from Shevet Yehuda. And Aholiyav ben Achisma comes from Shevet Dan. Now there's a Rashi. I know it's a Rashi somewhere. I was looking for it this morning during davening, and I couldn't find it. I know it's somewhere. It's not here, and it's not in Parashas Pekudei, but it's definitely somewhere. I know it's somewhere. I give you homework. You'll find where this Rashi is. Rashi says, Rashi's intrigued. Why were the two craftsmen, one from Shevet Yehuda, and the other from Shevet Dan? What's these two Shvatim? Rashi says, Shevet Yehuda was the most distinguished of all the tribes. Yehuda is Malchus. David's Malch comes from Yehuda, Shevet Yehuda. Lo Yosor Shevet Yehuda. The Malchus of David belongs to Shevet Yehuda. Pashat, right? This is, we're learning in the Yeshaya. Malchus of Yisrael was a little bit illegitimate. Was illegitimate to a certain degree, right? And then we have the Malchus of Yehuda, David. This is the real deal. Shevet Dan is the pechusim, the most undistinguished. You can't say they're the lightest of the 12 tribes. Dan comes from the mother of Dan is Bilhah Zilpah. I forgot which one, from the shvachos, from the maidservants, not from Rachel and Leah, and they did not have the same stature as the other tribes. What that means, the part of Klal Yisrael. We always find in rabbinic literature that Dan were from the Pechusim Shebeshvat. They were at the tail end.
Undistinguished.
What does that mean? How could you say that a fellow Jew is undistinguished? I do not know. Obviously, there's a lot more depth to this. But Dan is on the spectrum of Choshev. And less Choshev, Yehuda is the most, Dan is the least. This is Pashut, this is all over in Chazal. Rashi says, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu select a craftsman from Yehuda and a craftsman from Dan to make a statement? No, the Mishkan equality. Okay, there's no question, the Yadus, there's a hierarchy, there are levels, there are Kohanim, there are Levim, the Yisraelim, Talmidei Chachamim, there's no question, everyone has to know their place. That is a Dabar Pashut. But also, there's also a degree of equality. Everyone is equal. Everyone, there's a certain degree of equality. You have the Senate in the House. You know, in the Senate, everyone is equal. Every state has senators. There's an equal number of senators, but we're dealing with the House. Then it depends on the population of the state. There is a hierarchy, and then there is equality. So when you come into the Mishkan, no one should feel, it's not my home. Everyone has a chelik in the Mishkan. Who built the Mishkan? Who was the craftsman? Someone from Yehuda and someone from Dan. From one extreme to another extreme. Equality. This is what Rashi. So Rashi.
Equality is much of inclusiveness.
Inclusiveness. inclusiveness. Okay, you have to see the words of Rashi inside. You have to find the Rashi of Hashem, so find the Rashi somewhere. Rashi makes it very clear that from the most chashuv of the Shvatim to the bechutzim of the Shvatim, everyone is equal. No one should feel they're different. It's everyone is the same. Okay, now there's a very old minhag. I used to, a very intimate hagim, and I don't know the makar for the minhag. I don't want to say a drush, a possible explanation to explain why there is such a minhag. And the minhag, see, let me just give you a little background. When I was a child, you go to a shul, you look at the parochas of the Aron Kodesh, it looked like that in the back over there. You see that parochas in the back? You have luchos, which are of course not square, even though Michelangelo luchos, and there's always a crowd, and there are two lions. Okay, as I grew up, we became a much more sophisticated world. You build a shul, you have modern, everything has to be modern. Became very popular, Eitz Chaim Hilam HaChazikin Ba, and then as we got even more complicated, all these beautiful designs on the Aron Kodesh, you cannot never see anymore in a new shul, if someone cost a fortune to buy a parochas, it's totally outrageous with the prices for these things, a mantle, a parochas, the mantle costs so much to save it already, with the Atzei Chaim, no one's gonna put the lions anymore, it's just not in style. Correct? There, you go to a new shul. They have lions. You don't see it.
Carved out lions on top of
it. Even that. It's not in style. You've got it modern. It has to be. It has to look like this is too traditional. This is from a relic of the past. Lions. But yet, it's minhag Yisrael for hundreds of years, at least for 400 years, until probably 1970, 1980, go back 400 years, lions, this is the way it was. On the Aron Kodesh, there are lions. No one knows why. In fact, someone told me, I once went over this Svar Torah, someone told me they dug up in Egypt, in one of the probably the oldest shuls they found in Egypt, from 1,000 years ago, they found lions. The Aron Kodesh, with lions on top, luchos, like we have today, the same thing. This is the way it is. Yeah. This is the way it is. So I have a whole story. I used to have lions, and then I used to use those lions on Yom Narayim. We had an Aron Kodesh, a makeshift Aron Kodesh. I used to take it apart, and in 1 year the lions were gone. Someone stole the lions. Didn't steal the lions. I know who took the lions. They took it for another shul. I was so upset. They took away my lions. Okay, but. What is this? Lions. What does it come from? Where does it come? Lions. Somebody even question. Look in these new Haredi Svarim today. It's Avodah Zarah. What is this? You make a tzura. They have shalos and shuvas. Is it really right to have lions? A tzura. Leitzasin l'chapesel l'chol tenuna. Okay, it's not mamash Avodah Zarah, but is it really correct? There are a lot of questions. But yet, there's no one thing that's for sure. This is tradition. Lions. Why? Why? Where does it come from? I don't know the answer. And no, I couldn't find an answer. Not that I really looked very hard, but I want to say a chidush, suggest a possibility of where it comes from. It comes from this week's parasha. This week's parasha, we're coming to build the Mishkan, to build the place, the Hashras HaShchina, which rests upon the Oron, the Luchos. There are two craftsmen. There is Bezalel, and there is Oholiyah ben Achisamach. Bezalel comes from Shevet Yehuda, Oholiyah ben Achisamach comes from Shevet Dan. In the Birchos Yaakov, all of the Shvatim are compared to animals. Correct?
Right.
So let's go to Parashas Vayichi, and let's look how Yaakov Avinu compares to Shevet Yehuda. What does it say in the Pasuk? Let me find the Pasuk. Okay. I'm not good at this. Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Okay, you can't be Teref Bini Olisa. Korah, Ravatz, Ke'aryeh, Uchilavi, Mi Yikimenu. Two different types of lions, an Aryeh and a Lavi. There are really seven stages in the growth, the development of a lion. So here, very clear, he's called a Gur, an Aryeh, and a Lavi, a lion. Yehuda is a lion. Okay, what is Don, the Bechusim? Don, Nochosh, Ali, as a snake. Okay. Let's go to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu also gave a bracha. This I know by heart. Moshe gave a bracha also to the Shvatim right before he died. Uli dohon amahar, dohon gur arye yizaneik min habashon. Don is a lion. When you come into a shul, whose shul is this? Only for the talmidei chachamim? Only for the wealthy? It's everyone's shul. This is a place of the hashras hashchina, the luchos. Who surrounds the luchos? Two lions. Who are the two lions? One lion is Yehuda, it's Bezalel. The other lion is Oholiyah ben Achismach Lamate Don. Don Gur Aryeh, Yehuda is also a lion, two lions. This of the shul, the place where you come to daven, everyone is a partner. No one is special when you come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everyone is equal. You have lions. Okay, unfortunately, I mean, you should know today it's going back. And that's, everything goes in cycles. I've seen now they have beautiful tefillin bags. After you go into the modern world, then they start going back to the old traditional. I saw now some very beautiful tefillin bags with lions. Okay. But there's something to it. Minhag Yisrael Torah is no question for 400 years. Lions were, that was the trademark. You know, that was the icon of a Jewish shul. Okay, it's nothing wrong today. We have other beautiful symbols today. The artwork, it's fantastic. What, you go into a new shul, what they can do. But it's interesting. To look at a lion, the Aron Kodesh, you have to know what it means. Okay, one more vart, very quick vart. I'll tell you one more very quick vart. Just to move the tefillin on. Okay, I'll tell you one more very quick vart. The tefillin. This week's parashah about the tefillin. What did Hashem show Moshe Rabbeinu? Hashem show Moshe Rabbeinu the dalit. What is the Dalit? The Dalit is the place where your Mechaber, after the Dalit comes the Ritzuos. The Ritzuos extend all the way down to the body. The Dalit is the place, the Chibur, between the Rosh, the mind, the Ruchnius, and the Guf is the body, the Gashmius. That's really what, because out from the Dalit are the Ritzuos. If the Ritzuos are cut, it's possible. The Ritzuos must extend all the way down to the navel. It must extend all the way down to the guf. So the kesher shel tefillin represents, this is well known, this idea, represents the connection between ruchnius and gashmius. This is the person's avodah in this world. A person's role, goal, mission in this world is to be mechaber spirituality with materialism, with the mundane, to take the olam hagashmi and infuse it with spirituality and elevate it. To mimikasher the ruchnius with the gashmius. This is the principle. This is the number one yisod of yadus, and that's the kesher shel tefillin. Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "Hareini nas kavodach." Show me the front. Show me the ruchnius. Hashem said to Moshe, "That's not the purpose of this world. You're here in Olam Hazeh. The purpose is to be mikasher the ruchnius with the gashmius. I'm going to show you the dalit. The dalit is the kesher of the roish and the guf." There's a chazal. I don't know where this chazal is. You have to do homework to find the chazal. That tchias hanesim will occur. Where will the body be rejuvenated from? The luz bone. There's something called the luz bone. The luz bone is cannot be destroyed. Indestructible. Possible. And from that luz bone, that's where tchias hanesim will occur. Where is the luz bone? So I was fast. I never knew what the luz bone is. I heard
sacrum. That's how it gets the name. Sacred.
What does it mean? What does that mean?
Sacrum is the bone at the end of the spine.
Oh, so that end of the bone. So where is that bone? That is where the kesher shel tefillin. That is. It is in the practice.
The other end.
The lowest spine.
The other end.
Okay, so it's not clear if this is the same luz bone. It could be that this bone that you're referring to is not necessarily Chazal's interpretation of the luz bone. I don't know. They have to be mine in the Medrash. Okay, the Medrash says that the luz bone is on the place of where the kesher shel tefillin. Okay, it could be because it's all connected, so you know, not just what we have in the cities. Aroer, you have Yericho. Is it the same Yericho? Is it to the side? It's in the area. But according to this Maimon Chazal, you have to see the exact words of the Maimon Chazal, the luz bone is where the kesher shel tefillin ideally should rest. We today put the kesher tefillin lower than we really should for different reasons, a whole other story, because our ritzus are very wide and our tefillin are very big, and if you put it on the right location, it's not going to stay your tefillin. So we put the kesher tefillin lower, but it really should be a lot higher. Okay, that's another story. But in any event, the luz bone is, and where does the luz bone, that's going to be the source of Tchiyas HaMeisim. When does the, there's another chazal, we'll put all the Gemara chazal together, when does the luz bone, where does it get its sustenance? Every thing in the body needs sustenance. It gets its sustenance from the Sudas Malava Malka. You must have heard this at some point in time. The Sudas Malava Malka is where the luz bone receives its sustenance. So it's interesting. Now, what is Malava Malka? Mitzvah Shabbos. What is Mitzvah Shabbos? Mitzvah Shabbos really is the equivalent of the Kesher Shel Tilling. Because Shabbos, this week's parasha, Shabbos Yisai Tishmor, Shabbos Kula Ruchni. Shabbos, you don't do work. Chol, 6 days of weekday, is you do your work. You work. Gashmias. Motzoi Shabbos is the chibur, is the connection from the ruchnias to the gashmias. So all of these things come together. The kesher shel tefillin is the part of the is the part of the tefillin which joins the head to the body. It's located on the luz bone. The luz bone is the bone which derives its sustenance from the Sudas Malava Malka. What is the Malava Malka? It is the time of the week when you mechaber, the transition of Shabbos Kodesh and Zman, time where of Kodesh to a Zman of Chol. And it is from this where a person will merit Tchiyas HaMeisim. Because what is a person's role in this world? To be mechaber, the ruchnis with the gashmis. If a person succeeds, he will merit Tchiyas HaMeisim. So they all come together. It's very interesting. If you want to learn about a person, you look at people. What kind of person is he? Do I want to be mashadich with him? What kind of person is he? You look how they spend their Mitzvah Shabbos. You get a very good insight, a real insight into it. It's something. I'll tell you the joke. I'll tell you the joke again. I'll tell you another. Rabbi Reisman said that before the Kabbal came to Rabbi Reisman, said to Rabbi Reisman, you wonderful. Before we met you, every Mitzvah Shabbos we would go to the movies. This is our routine. And now, wonderful. We come now, and we have your shir. It's unbelievable Shabbos, and then we go to the shir. And then we go to the movies. Now, in the book, they have the book here. I saw the book over here, Pathway to the Prophets. It's a fantastic book. So many soydas in that book. They are cleaned. They are they censored the story. And what do they write? I go to work. Go read the book. I heard the original story. I heard him
say it recently.
I heard it. He said it in the movies?
I heard him say it recently.
What did he say? Movies?
Yeah.
Movies.
Yeah.
In the book, he wrote the book. I'm sure the editor. They cleansed. They cleansed the book. Art school wouldn't want to rub, you know, rub him in the wrong way. Yeah.
Plus, when you have the kesher,
yeah,
is really where the brain ends and the spinal cord
begins.
So that's...
It's the chibur.
There's a kesher there because the cognitive function is above.
Correct, right,
the
right.
The mechanical function
is below. The guf, right.
So
it's the kesher of the ruach and the gashmis.
It's more anatomically correct.
Okay, so that's all I want to say about the kesher. This is, all of these ideas, they come together. The kesher from the luz bone, Mitzvah Shabbos, these are all the same idea, and that's why, this is what I suggest. Right. That the spine represents, like you said, it's the mobility, it represents the guf, the body. This is the control of the body. This is the shirish of where the body begins. So all these ideas come together, and this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu, don't focus on my tefillah. Don't look at my tefillah. They'll tell me, you'll start correcting my tefillah if it's in the middle, not in the middle. Focus on the kesher shel tefillah. That's the role a person has in this world, to sanctify the gashmis, to be mechaber, the gashmis with the ruchnis. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Enjoy
your Shushan Purim.